Hello there and welcome to Cast Drivers. My name is Christian Corley. Now, we had a plan for this week's podcast. It was myself and Philip Bates chatting about Doctor Who Series 15. And then Russell T Davies came along and put the kibosh on that with his chat with the Newsround. So this week's podcast kicks off with myself and James McLean discussing this news concerning the future of Doctor Who. And then it will revert to the normal course of proceedings in which I chat with Philip Bates of the Doctor Who Companion about Doctor Who Series 15. We are here to have a little bit of a chat about the recent discussion that Russell T Davies had with the Newsround people that was broadcast earlier today. And this feeds into a podcast that we did recently. Now, if you're listening to this, then this is a bit of an unusual opening, and it's very different to the podcast I had in mind, which was just going to be me and Philip Bates discussing Doctor Who Season 15, or Series 15. As it is, because of what's happened today, James and I decided to get together and have this little chat, which you should be watching on our free Patreon first, and then if you're listening to this, then you could have had this a bit earlier. But anyway, so James, I sent you the link earlier on. I was a little bit shocked because I was kind of edging towards your point of view with the whole Disney RTD Shuti Gatwa thing that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. And then there's this kind of chat between Davies and the Blue Pete, Big Band, the Newsround interviewer, who asked about a third season under Davies, and Russell T Davies responds, "I kind of know that the Doctor's reached the status of like Robin Hood. Sometimes there might be a pause, and during that pause, the viewers of Newsround, and I think this is the important bit, the viewers of Newsround now will grow up for a few years and start writing stories, and they'll bring it back. So I have absolute faith that will survive because I am living proof of it, and that's what happens to good ideas. No good idea ever dies." There's an element of finality about this.
Yeah. Which, so yep. So yeah. You got me out of my evening to come and give you a positive. I can now go now back to my evening. It is. I find what is interesting here is I don't think it massively changes the stuff we talked about last week, because I still am a quite firm believer that Doctor Who is at a point in its cycle that it wouldn't really matter who's in the role and who is show running. I think if the state of affairs is as it has might have proved out with Disney, I don't think it would have been any different with any other. Yeah. I also suspect that maybe if it had been with any other, Disney might not have picked it up in the first place. So I don't think that's changed. I think what is really interesting here is that without any news having broken, he has made statements which it's very hard to find another spin on it.
Yeah.
Other than that he is suspecting or knows or both. Can you do both? I suppose you can. That there might be a hiatus coming. That if Disney doesn't pick it up, then the BBC won't run with it. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting here, which has always been mooted, hasn't it? That the BBC is kind of running it with Disney, and if Disney didn't, there's a good chance that the BBC couldn't afford it. And that does feel like where we're possibly at. He's right, though, sometimes. And we've said this for many years. I think Brian especially, you know, that sometimes a rest is good and give a space for it to recharge its interest. Because as we said last week, 20 years, you know, that's 20. How many shows are 20 years? Most shows these days, you know, with very few exceptions, which tend to be global phenomenon, don't go past two seasons at this sort of budget. So you've got 20 years of a fairly big budget show at various levels. It was still big budget. And I suppose the only question is could it have been made? Could it still have been made cheaper in a way the BBC could still run it? I think it could. I think it would. They would have to try and make a different show.
Yeah.
But I've always said this. I used to say this in the 90s, back when I was young and, you know, 5% of our audience weren't born. I'm assuming we've got quite a lot of audience there, haven't we? If it's just 5%, and I'm assuming it's just one person, the
it's
one
roughly
outlier.
That though, yeah, based on the statistics I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, weird small amount of people who continue to listen to this bilge.
He still wants an award, though, ladies and gentlemen. He still wants an award.
Yeah, I don't mind. I mean, there's enough of you to get together and make us an award. I mean, you only need 2-3 people. There's more, you know, there's more than that. You know, there's a good statistical chance that within that small cohort, there's a people there who could make us an award. But yeah, as I said, back in the 90s, I used to sort of say this when Doctor Who was dead, was like, surely it wouldn't be hard to kind of do what Probe and, you know, the Downtime and all those sort of things were doing at very cheap cost.
But on a TV budget.
On a TV budget, make Doctor Who into, well, I used to say at the time, like The X-Files, where it's all about smokes and mirrors, and make it an intimate show. And I think, to be honest, if I was to do Doctor Who now, if I was in this position, that's kind of what I'd be pushing for, is to shift it to an intimate show of spookiness, grounded, less space stations, you know, go back to the 70s idea, ground them on Earth, maybe, and see if that plays out with any, because it would be different. It might be interesting to people, but...
I actually turned up a doodle. I was doing a sitting girls and TV and video production in the mid to late 90s. And one of the things was to, one of the project ideas we were tossing around was to do a science fiction thing set on Earth. And what we actually ended up doing, I think, was a drama about someone winning a lottery ticket, which was very rubbish. But anyway, and the thing I was working on was this science fiction thing. And it wasn't Doctor Who, but it was basically the idea of a Doctor Who, but on Earth, like the Probe, those other things, investigating urban alien invasions. Some of the stuff that Torchwood would do later on, only with a lot more humour. Torchwood, not the thing I was proposing. And I think a lot of us were probably thinking along similar sort of lines, especially in light of The X-Files, which started off with a relatively low budget and then that kind of went up as the seasons progressed, didn't it?
Yeah, no, it's... But I suppose the question is, and this is where it comes down to a production point of view, to a show-running point of view, is who do you feel the show is aimed at? And if you did something like that, invariably you'd be shifting the demographic. You'd be looking at targeting 40 pluses again, because you'd be playing something which should be a little more low key, probably a little more intimate, could still have the jokes, could still be quirky, but you wouldn't be playing for spectacle. And I suppose there would be an argument, even at a reduced budget, who is that aimed at? And do we not necessarily devalue our property, but do we start moving the property away from where it is really meant to be for if it ever returned? Is that kind of, but then you could argue that the new adventures and the books were kind of doing that anyway. Well, Doctor Who had grown up in the 90s and then kind of de-aged.
Regressed.
You could argue regressed, if you like, in 2005. I must admit, as a watcher in 2005, I enjoyed it being back, having grown up in the 90s with the new adventures. Yeah. To me, it felt it had regressed a little bit. When I watched Rose, I was kind of disappointed because, to be fair, Rose wasn't really, was a bit of an outlier compared to the rest of the series in terms of tone. It hadn't quite found its space yet. But yeah, I was thinking, oh, this is become a bit silly. But I think that is where Davis obviously really feels is where its niche market is. And it kind of makes sense. There are so many serious adult sci-fis. There's not many sci-fis aimed at fun, sort of younger demographics. I suppose I can see a logic that if you're going to try and go global with this, and this is what Davis does well anyway, aim it. And I think no one could disagree. There's a certain feel that the last series was very much aimed at a younger demographic. And I think that was because he saw that as a catchment point. That was the market intervention. Because everywhere else had stuff that it would compete with and couldn't compete with. So go for that space, but it still perhaps didn't do quite what they wanted. And like I said, I'm not sure I could imagine a show that costs that sort of amount of money, which has to be kind of shared, necessarily sort of making big waves these days. I mean, when was the last sci-fi show to make big waves these days, which hasn't had like 4-year breaks in between seasons? I don't know.
I do wonder though, just in light of this, and obviously we don't know what's going to happen in series 15. Philip and I will be discussing that in the podcast proper, but I'm still amazed that with the money, let's call it the money, Disney, we'll call them the money, and everything that entails and the special effects and everything, how we didn't get some vast alien invasion or a Dalek versus Cyberman conflict or something that really takes advantage of the scale that it brings in the last series. And, you know, I know there was some episodes with some good scale, but I also know there's some very intimate episodes. But the thing I always think of when I think of this current run of Doctor Who is the inside of the TARDIS, and it seems to be a massive waste of space. And there could be, and clearly, obviously, they want to spend a bit of time in it because they spent all that money making the big TARDIS interior and everything. And this idea that the TARDIS has to be big inside because it's bigger on the inside as opposed to lots of rooms on the inside. It just feels, I'm feeling lost opportunities.
But I think that, again, is a reflection of our market. The market is, you fire an ad out for a show, you've got limited time with the saturation of material, and people would argue people's attention span, certainly if it's on a social media flick through, you need to wow quickly, and a big console room sells the sort of wackiness of this show in a way that if it was multiple corridors and multiple rooms, it may not. I mean, I agree with you. I don't disagree. I've thought for 20 years has been with it for, and I kind of feel it's been a wasted opportunity to feel like that is a space which has any meaning. That back in the day, especially in the 80s, it felt like that was someone's space. It felt like a place that you could visit. It felt like a realistic space for someone to exist in. While why would any Time Lord, unless they were particularly ostentatious, which of course none are, want to have things that big and that ridiculous and that scale, which are just empty, dull spaces? And as you say, they cost a lot of money. I sometimes think this is probably the problem Doctor Who has got into, is that, like with a lot of these shows, and we've said this before on one of our many podcasts, you get so trapped in your lore, you can't escape it. And in a sense, does the TARDIS have to be about it being bigger on the inside? That feels like it almost becomes a trapping of the show, which literally becomes a trapping that it's got to be bigger on the inside. I mean, it could still be bigger, but if it's like a mysterious space with many rooms, or, you don't know what rooms are going to be there. The Doctor Who has sort of got caught in its own trappings of what it is. Yes. So the TARDIS can't really be anything but bigger on the inside. And I don't think, I think the outside should stay the same, because I think that does give the show an anchor. But what's the inside? It could change each time. It could be a space which could sometimes be crazy or malevolent or, and they could have fun with it. But this idea is it's got to be a room with a rotor and a many-sided console and lots of space. And that's exciting. And I suppose for the first season, they did have a bit of that. But yeah, the show does try, as we've said before, does try to make changes, but they just never feel either at the right time or significant enough.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the TARDIS interior is particularly emblematic of where Doctor Who is now. Although, I mean, there might be some vague correlation, perhaps, I don't know. It just, money. I do feel it's missed opportunities, but we'll wrap this up because I want to get on with the main podcast, editing the main podcast together so it can go out, but also so
Christian's bored now.
Well, no, it's not that I'm bored. It's
Christian's done.
Because I want to wrap it up, and we'll probably end up talking about something else, because I do feel like it's a missed opportunity. And obviously there's 8 episodes to get through. We know there's no Doctor Who Christmas special. We know that there's nothing after the 8th episode of this run of episodes. So Trudy Gatwa's probably done. The interviews, he seems a little bit DMOP happy, perhaps. I don't know. He says he doesn't know in the Newsround segment earlier on today. Russell T Davies does know, and there isn't anything to say. So,
but then it could be this all links together. You know, people have been saying Shooty's leaving. It could be simply that,
yeah.
Internal rumour mill is that it's probably not going to be picked up. So ergo, he's leaving.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as that.
Yeah,
and
sure.
They've known for weeks, months, maybe. Yeah.
Now, there was rumours around me now, mid-April. So six to 8 weeks ago, there was rumours that he had left completely. And that regeneration scene had been filmed. Presumably some sort of glowing SFX thing. Well, you know, I mean, that's easy to speculate against because there's a very simple cipher for the show. I never thought when we started the website, Casturbis, and certainly not when we started talking, you and I, back in 2011 on these podcasts, that we would be having a conversation about Doctor Who not getting renewed.
Yeah,
as likely as it would be that it would happen because it's a TV show and that's what happens in the TV industry, I still didn't think it would actually. It never occurred to me that it might actually happen at any point whilst we were making these podcasts.
But if you were thinking back in 2010, 2011, whatever it was, you know, the streaming era didn't start till 2013.
No, sure, yeah.
So the radicalized, you know, in the space of this time, the change in television has been so gigantic that the terrain is now totally different. If television had poddled on with Sky in the background and the main terrestrial channels, I think it would probably still be wobbling on. But I think a lot of this is indicative to a market which has left it behind.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stand out anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you think this was a show which stood out in 1970. You know, that was the kind of space where it was making lots of millions because there was nothing else like it on TV. In fact, to be honest, for kids and teenagers, there was nothing really else on TV. Now we're in a point where the same sort of people, young people and teenagers, there is absolutely everything on TV and absolutely everything on social media platforms. And I think that is killing its opportunity to sort of continue as it has done before immortally. And so, yeah, I think this is probably the end for a while. I don't think this is to do with Gatwa. I don't think this is to do with Davies, regardless of people's opinions. I think this is to do with the show just being tired.
Yeah.
It's tried to push itself out into a bigger world, and that bigger world is kind of gone. You're just another show.
Now, over the next few weeks, we'll be looking at each episode of Doctor Who season.
Feels a bit of a waste of time now, doesn't it? Like, why should we bother? You know.
I think it is interesting because, you know, there is a lot of work. There's a lot of fans doing stuff. Mm-hmm. We've got Philip Bates. He's got a new book. His most recent book is getting issued again later this year, and we're going to be talking to him after the end of the series.
Cool.
But I think also it would be a good opportunity to look at what Doctor Who might do next.
Yeah,
because this is the first time in 30 years nearly that we don't know what's coming next for Doctor Who.
Hmm.
30 years ago, there was rumours of what would eventually become the TV movie.
Well, this is it, absolutely. And it may transform into something else. I mean, certainly Big Finish will carry on. I think Big Finish will carry its legacy forward for... I don't think that's going to stop, maybe. Because I think what it'll probably end up doing is picking up the current era of fans. Well, at the moment, Big Finish, let's be honest, mainly caters for the sort of 40 pluses, with some exceptions of the new material it's doing. That new material, I think, will grow as it becomes its new missing legacy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's the first book call. That's where we know it will happen. But where beyond that, you know, who knows? Who knows what, you know, where drama's going to go?
Okay, so let us know what you think. Sorry, she's quite stunning and sudden. Not so much sudden news, perhaps, but it is news that maybe needs a little bit of digestion and discussion. So do message us in the Patreon, and we can have exchanges, as we have done with a couple of things recently. That's all from me and James now, and until next time, it's goodbye.
Worlds out there where this kind of equipment would be considered prehistoric junk.
With me is Philip Bates of the Doctor Who Companion.com.
Hello, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
How are you?
All right, yeah, doing very well, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah. I'm grand. Yeah. I'm having one of those vague... I think I'm having a slight flu-y thing going on if I take some of those those fuel capsules, which I don't. Did I just call them fuel capsules? Flu capsules, which I don't particularly like taking. But I'm feeling like, I'm not sure if it's hay fever or flu, basically. So it's that little balancing thing where you never know which one of the two that it is. So that's what's happening with me at the moment. So if it seems like I'm not paying attention or I've drifted away on a tangent, that's what's happened.
Blame hay fever? Okay, all right.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the time of year for it, isn't it? Doctor Who's coming along back on April 12th.
Yeah, that's right. Brand new season. 8 episodes, I believe.
8 episodes. I mean, there's so much we could say about there being 8 episodes. You know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
How many was it 10 years ago? And I'm wondering if there actually was 13 episodes 10 years ago. And I'm thinking maybe there was probably 12 episodes 10 years ago. But 20 years ago, there was 13. What?
Well, the Christmas special makes a difference, doesn't it? Yeah. Which we don't even know if we're getting this year. So, yeah. So otherwise, I think we'd gone through 2013 was we didn't have loads of episodes then, but then I think we had two series of 12 or 13 episodes with Capaldi about 10 years ago. So yeah, it's a major cut, but. We've also got a spin-off coming up, I suppose. So,
Is this the Silurian thing?
War Between Land and the Sea.
Yeah.
I think that's 6 episodes.
With its catchy title.
Yeah. That's the one. Yeah, so I think that's 6 episodes, but we don't know when that's coming. Presumably late this year, I would say.
Yeah. It's a weird world being. I mean, I'm not really a fan of any TV show at the moment. It's probably fair to say, except maybe Midsummer Murders. I don't know. But okay. Strictly speaking, though,
is that still on? All right.
Yeah, that's still on. Yeah. But you know, generally speaking, as I was, and I forgot what I was going to say, but it was largely around the same of having a show like Doctor Who, which is supposed to be a mainstream show.
Yeah.
And goes out at prime time scheduling. To have a spin-off that seems to be slightly vague and not particularly one of the things that people would have expected from a spin-off, and also to be... It seems like a weird spin-off to me. And I think that's basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I think because it's... So Sea Devils, probably nothing's been confirmed yet apart from the units in it.
Yeah.
So there's the hook, really. And the final two episodes, I think the final two of this next series of Doctor Who has unit in. So I'm presuming that they're hoping people will just think, you know, that it's a unit spin-off by a different title. Having the Sea Devils in it likely means that it's just a retread of Doctor Who and the Silurians and the Sea Devils. But they might do something interesting with it. They might have people who were fans of the Third Doctor era tuning in just for a bit of reminiscing. But yeah, it does seem a bit curious. But I don't know, we've not had a load of spin-offs anyway.
No. Well, obviously we had Savage Jane Adventures, which I think is probably the...
Yeah.
You know, that's the pinnacle of Doctor Who spin-offs and by far and away 100%. The best.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are probably better than Doctor Who itself.
Oh, yeah.
Then you've got all the Torchwoods, where you've really only got Children of Earth, and not even every episode of Children of Earth is brilliant, but that's the one that stands out for Torchwood.
Yeah.
And then you've got Class.
Yeah.
Which most people forget about and probably want to.
Yeah.
Is there another one? Have we done them all?
Probably K9 and Company.
Well, I mean, that's a 30 year early pilot for Sarah Jane, isn't it? So,
yeah, essentially, people, I don't know. People would say Doctor Who Confidential, or is it Unleashed? Oh, now? Right, yeah. But they're not traditional spin offs, are they? Just behind the scenes stuff, which you know makes me sound like I'm devaluing it, but I loved Confidential. I thought it was wonderful. Not so keen on the new show, I think I've only watched a couple of episodes, but it's fine.
Yeah.
It's a bit in your face for my liking.
It doesn't.
I've always been interested in behind the scenes of any TV show, really. Sure. And it doesn't really fill that criteria enough for me. But I'm sure it has its fans. Yeah. So a unit spin-off would be obvious, but for some reason they've not done a spin-off called Unit. They've called it the War Between the Land and the Sea.
Yeah, they made it sound like a comic strip or a novel.
Yes, yeah.
Unit!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. TV action, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I wonder if it's a rights thing, but I doubt it. You know, maybe the rights are owned by someone or other, and they're not allowed to use Unit in the title.
Well, I mean, they probably would be allowed if they paid money. But anyway, let's move on from that. I understand that the episode titles for the next series of Doctor Who are available.
Yeah.
Is there anything interesting in there that stands out?
The first few have been rumoured for a while. So Robot Revolution has been rumoured for months. What's interesting about that, I think, is it's directed by Peter Hoare, who last did A Good Man Goes to War.
Wow, yeah.
And he's done lots of great stuff otherwise. So, and he's a friend of Russell's, Russell T. Davis. So it's not a great shock that he's come back, but after more than a decade away, it's a nice surprise, I would say. We have Lux, which is the one set in 1952 Miami, with Alan Cumming as an animated character.
Right.
The Well has potential, I think. It feels it's the Doctor and the new companion going into the deep, whatever that means. So there are sort of allusions to Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit. And Peter Hoare's back to direct Lucky Day as well, which is the return of Ruby Sunday and Unit.
Right.
Bring Unit back in then. I think the one that's particularly intriguing is the story and the engine. It's bizarrely only the second Doctor Who with an ampersand in the title.
Trivia fans.
Yep, there we go. There we go. If you can think of the first one.
Unicorn and the Wasp.
No.
No?
No. Before
Love and Monsters, of course it is.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
Yeah.
But that's set in a barbershop, which is very unusual. I like when Doctor Who does unusual things like that. Yeah. We've got, obviously, a two-part finale written by Russell as well.
Okay, are there Daleks?
Oh, it's a good question. There have been no Daleks spotted, but possible Dalek ships.
Okay.
So, and I know Shooty wants to, you know, rightly wants to come up against the Daleks, rite of passage and all that. So I would say it's pretty likely.
Yeah, probably is. We need Daleks. I just want to interrupt proceedings there briefly to remind you that the Castobras podcast goes out first on Patreon, where it is ad-free, it is early, as I say, and you also get additional content. This might be longer episodes, or it might be supplementary material, such as a video that accompanies this week's edition. You can head to patreon.com/Castobras and sign up. Our Patreon is free. Do take advantage of that. Okay, back to the chat. Just a slight sidestep. I noticed that you're 9 years old.
Yeah, yes, I am.
The Doctor Who companion specifically, not Philip. Very deep voice for nine.
Well, I'm an early learner, you know. I develop quickly.
Early puberty.
Yeah. We Doctor Who Companion made 9 years yesterday, which was the 26th of March.
So,
very, very happy with that. We launched in, a year of uncertainty. 2016 was, nobody was quite sure what we were getting. For Doctor Who on TV, really. I think the first episode we covered was The Return of Doctor Mysterio. It was uncertain times, and obviously a couple of years later everything changed again with Chris Chibnall coming in and Jodie Whittaker. And there's been sort of highs and lows this past sort of 18 months, I would say, have been a bit dodgier. People haven't been so engaged in Doctor Who, sadly. But we are starting to get more people coming back, which is it's great to see. Yeah.
Yeah, it's excellent. It's I dip in occasionally into the comment section. It's nice to see familiar faces from before Doctor Who's Companion still grouped together and chatting with each other.
Yeah, that was really why we made the Doctor Who Companion, because obviously you had Cass Cerberus and that went through some troubled times, let's say.
Yes.
And so we wanted to keep everyone together and still do what we were doing, really. So hence the DWC launched. And I think we're still a bit under the radar. I wouldn't say we're not blocked to who.
Is that still a thing?
It is. Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah, still marching ahead. And I don't think the BBC always likes us, because we don't tend to get sent press releases and stuff. We have to play it by ear.
Wow.
But I think we still manage to get the news out as soon as we can.
When we did Cass Cerberus as a Doctor Who site,
yeah,
it took a while to get press releases from the BBC. But, I mean, you've been going for 9 years, and Cass Cerberus really only ran for 11 years under me.
Yeah.
And we definitely had press releases after a couple of years. So for them to not send you press releases, and presumably, I'm guessing, the screeners as well, is extremely short-sighted and stupid.
It does seem a bit strange, yeah. In the past, we've got press releases from licensees and things like that, obviously. Yeah. But from the BBC itself, I think we got sent a couple, and then I realised how badly put together they were. They were very unprofessional. And so I think I openly criticised them.
Oh, right.
They probably didn't like that. but equally, that was a long time ago.
Well, the other thing as well is I've noticed that, I mean, and the BBC's PR team isn't alone in this, they go through a lot of writers, press release PR specialists. There's no way that whoever was writing press releases then knows or cares what you said about it then.
Yeah, that's true. I think as well, they're quite lax with these things. Quite often what I see online is one site has it, and then it does the rounds elsewhere after that. Mm-hmm. As if one site's got the press release and everybody else is just catching up.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably a bit of that as well. And this adds to my feeling that we're still a bit under the radar.
Yeah. But I mean, that's good in a way, isn't it? Because that lets you do things that you maybe wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah, Yeah, I remember we got a few emails a few years ago asking to take a few news items down because they were inconvenient for
Oh
the
no.
BBC.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Inconvenient.
I know,
Oh,
I know.
Philip, I thought better of you. Fancy being so inconvenient.
That might have been my word, not theirs. Theirs was possibly a little more strongly worded.
Are you able to share what any of these stories were?
One, oh, I don't know, to be honest.
Okay.
I think enough time has passed that nothing's going to happen. One was about a possible successor to the Doctor Who experience,
Okay.
which I think a lot of people had heard on the grapevine,
Yeah.
but it wasn't being reported anywhere.
Okay.
And now I know why, because they asked us to take it down. Which we didn't, we just reworded. I
Okay.
think it, I don't like caving into
No.
to pressure like that.
No.
If it's something that's going to harm the show, then yes, or if it's something that's upsetting a specific person for a very good reason, then I'll take it down.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah, I think we're a separate entity. You know, and Casterbury started that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I feel like I'm maybe slightly responsible for this, but I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I wouldn't even say slightly responsible. I blame it
Okay.
on you. Yeah. So the BBC hating us is largely your fault.
My fault.
But
Okay. Okay. I can live with that.
Yeah, I thought you could, yeah. But
Okay, the radio. Oh, go on, what?
we still do a good job of reporting what they need us to, I feel.
No,
I
yeah,
mean,
without a doubt you do, yeah.
oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah, there's, I mean, and you also manage to find stuff when there isn't really much to talk about as well, which is quite a skill as well, as we found out in sort of 2004 and a lot of 2005, really.
Yeah.
That
And we
before the
might.
show arrived, that you had to just dig and dig and dig to find something to talk about.
Yeah, and we might be going back to those times, you know, if Doctor Who's rested at all, we
Do you
might
think,
struggle.
do you, I mean, what do you think the chances are of that?
I don't think it'll be cancelled, but I think it might be rested for a short time.
Right.
But yeah, I honestly don't know. I couldn't call it right now.
Yeah. The thing about that is that it's had lots of rests over the past decade. So if it was going to have a rest, it would need to be upwards of 2 years, wouldn't it? Maybe 5 years.
Yeah, I was thinking five. Yeah. And I think that would do the show a lot of good. Because right now, I talk to people and they say, "Oh, is Doctor Who still on?"
Yeah.
And I think that's just due to its longevity, really. I think you're always going to get people like that because they do a decent enough job of promoting it, I feel.
Yeah, well, James and I spoke about this whole matter of public perception of Doctor Who and whether it's still on and who's watching it a few weeks ago in a previous podcast, which I'll link to in the show notes for anyone
Yeah.
listening, because it's quite interesting what I found from just speaking to members of my family of different ages. Let's move on to Radio Times' list of the top 20 Doctor Who's since 2005.
This is quite interesting as well because so obviously to celebrate 20 years of Doctor Who, they've of 21st century Doctor Who, they've published a list of the best modern episodes, except actually they haven't published a list. They've published two lists. There's one online and one in the physical copy of the Radio Times.
Are they different?
Which is quite interesting. The one in the physical Radio Times isn't ranked, which might be, you know, the kicker. The one online is ranked.
Ah.
And the surprising thing is the one online has no episodes for the 13th, 14th or 15th Doctors.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah. Whereas the physical copy I've selected maybe two or three for each, apart from the 14th Doctor, obviously, where they just picked Star Beast.
Of course, I mean, that meets perfectly with my my theory that Doctor Who ended with Capaldi, but there you go. There is a lot of Stephen Moffat in there.
There is, and I'm very pleased to hear it, really. For me, he's my go-to Doctor Who writer. I think there's some people who get very close, but he's the best, really, of certainly 21st century Doctor Who. You know, I know people will say Robert Holmes as well. Yeah, I think Stephen Moffat's up there with Holmes, personally.
Yeah, I'm not. I would agree with that. I'm just looking at this and seeing how little Russell T Davies is in it, actually, this list. Turn Left and Rose.
Yeah, Midnight, Impossible Planet, sort of.
Finding of the Ways, Doomsday. But, yeah, there's so much Stephen Moffat in there. I'm not saying that it's incredible in an incredulous way. It's an incredible achievement, given the high quality of writers that they've had in Doctor Who, particularly during the 2005 to, say, 2015 period.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised to see that the Day of the Doctor only made third, to be honest, in their list.
I think it's been plodding in places. I think that's probably why.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, in subsequent rewatches, I felt it goes a little bit slow in places.
Ah, that's interesting. Okay. I shockingly feel the same about Heaven Sent, which is the number one. Now, I love Heaven Sent, but sometimes it's a bit ploddy, as you say.
What would you put at number one then? Or is there anything in there that you'd expect it to see that wasn't in there?
Well, my favourite Doctor Who's never make these lists, to be honest. So I'm not shocked. My personal favourites would be The Pandora Opens, The Big Bang and A Christmas Carol. I think they're just spectacular. I think they're so clever.
And Christmas Carol's aged well.
Sorry?
Christmas Carol has aged well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's based on a book that everybody basically knows inside out, but it still does something very interesting with it.
Yeah.
It still feels very warm and witty. I think it's a masterpiece, to be honest. I think it's the actually better than a lot of the stuff on those best modern episode lists. But you know, these lists are still, they still have a lot of great stuff in there. What's interesting as well about the online version of the list is that they split up the two-parters.
Right, yeah.
Which is, quite an interesting approach.
Yeah, so they've got separate, they've got six and five Parting of the Ways. Oh, sorry, they're the wrong materials. Gallant Rose, Forest of the Dead, Impossible Astronaut, World Nothing Time. Right, I see what you've done. Yeah, Impossible Planet. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, Silence in the Library.
Yeah, Silence in the Library is 20.
Forest of the Dead is 13.
Forest of the Dead is 13, yeah. Yeah, which is an interesting choice. Definitely.
Would you add in anything from after Capaldi into a top 20 list like that? Hello?
It sounds harsh, but it does sound harsh, but no, I don't think I would. I don't think there's been anything really of the quality of maybe, you know, if there was a top 50 list, then I possibly add in Boom. But otherwise, I don't think there's anything that that really touches, you know, World Enough and Time and The Doctor Falls. I can't see Spyfall matching it.
No.
Power of the Doctor has a lot of fan service moments, but the Day of the Doctor has not just fan service, but a fantastic plot as well. And I don't think you get that.
No. I mean, I would struggle myself. I think maybe if Flux was a bit tighter and didn't have any dangling threads that weren't resolved within it, then I would probably, there would probably be one or two episodes from that I might be happy to see in a top 20.
Really? Okay. Well, in the physical copy of the Radio Times, they put Village of the Angels in the top. But yeah, that list diverges quite a bit from the online one. For instance, when I was looking through the magazine, I was shocked to see that the 11th Hour wasn't there. But right.
It's on the online list,
Online, yes. Yeah. So that's quite interesting. But I see the online list is picked by a lot of different people. Sci-fi editors, drama writer, blah, blah, blah.
Got you, yeah.
Whereas I suppose the magazine version wants to cater for fans of, you know, 15th Doctor era and so on as well. So they're trying to get more in. Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting. A lot of contributors in that. Okay, let's move on. Obviously, we'll link to that in the show notes so you can check it out yourself. I mean, it's maybe something we should talk about in depth with James and myself at some point this year, but we'll see. Before that happens, though, I just want to ask you one thing. I'll just talk about one thing briefly. And Ian Levine has announced that he has completed his AI restoration of the missing episodes this morning.
Oh, okay.
Or last night. I'm not sure what time it was posted. March 26th at 6:33 p.m. So last night. He stated in his private Facebook group, I think that's private, you can't view them unless there's some kind of like special arrangement with Ian. This is a day to mark in your calendars forever, a day to always remember in the history of Doctor Who fandom. For the first time ever, there are no Doctor Who episodes missing, and Philip Morris can shove his Omni rumour up his arse. I quote, we can now watch perfectly acceptable versions of all 97 missing episodes in black and white and in the correct aspect ratio without resorting to silly crude cartoons and cheap reinventions. Now, I'm pretty much on board with the last half of that sentence, but I'm not a big fan of AI reconstructions, I have to say. What are your feelings on this?
I absolutely detest them. You know, it's that simple. I hate AI. I hate AI for creative purposes. I can see why he's done it, but it feels a bit of a folly to me. And I think Ian gets a lot of criticism. Some of it's warranted, some of it isn't, but he does love the show, at least, and what he's done is to some extent a labor of love.
Yeah,
but I wish that labor of love had gone into something more creative, because I don't think AI is creative. No. I think it tried to be, but you know.
I'm with you pretty much all the way on there. Ian, I think maybe feels as though this is some sort of something that he wants to do. So that's fine. I mean, he does say without resorting to silly crude cartoons. I don't mean to be unnecessarily cruel, but the Levine managed version of Sharda, the animation was not. It wasn't Disney. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. I think the animations always get a lot of criticism. Some of it is fair. The Celestial Toymaker, for instance, I didn't bother picking up because what's the point? It looks awful.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry to the people who worked on it, but I can't financially back that.
Which is odd, isn't it? Because it's as though they've attempted to do lots of different art styles and animation styles, perhaps in some, I don't know if it's ill-judged or what, an attempt to appeal to people. But really, all people want to watch is a Doctor Who, in these terms of, you know, in this, for a reconstruction, an animated reconstruction, you just want to watch something that's not going to take you out of the story. And bad animation or quirky animation or unusual animation or unsuitable animation, because, you know, maybe some of the animation styles they've used would work perfectly in a particular type of story, perhaps something. I mean, look at the Doctor Who trailer for this season, and you've got the animated episode or the episode with animated aspects to it, which seem perfect for that story and for the character. But that's not what's happening with these reconstructions, because all those stories have already been told. So it just seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. I think when people think of the best animations, unfortunately, they don't think of anything too recent. They go back to, obviously, the first one was Invasion. That was beautifully done.
Yeah.
The Moon Base is probably the best animation, I would say. I think it's superb. And obviously a lot of companies fell through, so they've had to change art styles based on that. But more recently, they seem to have kept a few directors and producers on between projects. And I know that there's a hell of a lot of work that goes into them, obviously. I hadn't realised quite how much. To be honest, I was working with Colin Howard on his book Time Slides, and he was showing me the background art that he did for Evil of the Daleks. And it was so intricate. There was so much to it. I think that gets lost to some degree. Or gets missed by a lot of fans. You know, rightly so. People are going to get carried away with the story, so it's understandable. But then, when you see a massive drop in quality like that, was it episode 3 of The Web of Fear, then you really notice the drop. When you haven't got as much love and attention put into every aspect, when it does start to look like AI to some extent, then you think, well, might as well have just done AI.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it does feel as though maybe having a consistent style across, or at least having a consistent style between the first Doctor and the second Doctors, having their own animation style for each of those missing episode eras might have been the way to go. Okay.
Do you have a favourite animation? Can you think of one that you particularly liked?
I'm thinking probably the Invasion or the Reign of Terror.
Ah, yes. Yeah, Reign of Terror was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Understandable. Yeah, as I say, those are sadly very old examples now.
Yeah, well, what's your, I mean, do you have a favourite? Would you agree with mine?
I think mine would be the Moon Base.
Moon Base, okay.
Yeah, I think it was superb, really. Tenth Planet was good as well. I haven't seen The Savages yet, but I know that came out earlier this week, which might be, you know, maybe in Levine timed his AI reconstructions to finish, coinciding with the release of Savages. I don't know.
So big thanks to Philip Bates for joining us to discuss Doctor Who this week. As I said, Doctor Who is back on screens on April the 12th. That's on BBC TV and on iPlayer, and I think on Disney for international people as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, excellent. Same date.
Yeah. So thank you, Philip.
Thank you.